Welcome to Radio Rehab. I'm your host, Dana. If you would like to contact us, it's radiorehab@gotoproductions.com. That's GOTOProductions.com. You can call or text 415-496-9511, even when we're not in studio. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, it's at Radio Rehab Dana. This week, we are continuing my series of episodes with my friend, John, who is also in a band called The Mini Meltdowns. At the end of each episode, we're going to be playing you some of his music, so stick around for that. Today, John and I will be talking about his history as an alcoholic, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Let's join the conversation.
Welcome to Radio Rehab.
Here's your host, Dana Keys.
In studio via Skype from Nashville, my good friend Johnny Phillip, who has a new band called The Mini Meltdowns. And we'll be playing his music at the end of each episode.
Thanks a lot for having me, and thanks a lot for doing this. Appreciate it.
This has been a long time in the making, honestly. Like, I wanted to have you on the show a million times. I knew it would be a great show, so I wanted to make sure we had all the Skype kinks worked out, because there's been a couple times I interviewed somebody through Skype and it like sounded bad and looked bad, but you're a musician and you have your own recording stuff, so this is gonna sound like we're in the same room.
I love it.
Me too.
Technology, baby.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about what happened with you as far as your story goes, as far as your alcoholism goes. When did you, I think you were saying in the last episode that you started drinking around, did you say 17 or 18?
I did. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I wasn't one of those 8-year-old drinkers either. Like, I started later in life too, but... Mm-hmm. Do you remember what it was like when you started? Was it a sense of relief?
I always had a bit of social anxiety, kind of lack of confidence, especially at that age. You know, who doesn't really? Mm-hmm. When you're trying to figure out what kind of person you are or who you are. I hung out with a large majority of the punk crowd back in the day, and they all kind of drank or smoked cigarettes. So I kind of gatewayed into drinking heavily right around that time. And I'm not blaming anybody who I hung out with, but I remember the first shot of whiskey I ever took, it gave me this warming feeling and this sense of relief that I have never felt before. And I was like, okay, this is for me.
Did you find that it made you able to talk to people with less of a shyness and with less, being less self-conscious about yourself?
Absolutely.
Liquid courage, as they say.
Yeah. And it also gave me this sense of I could do anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can make music. I can make any friend that I want. I can dress like I want to dress. It made me who I was. So I largely didn't want to stop drinking because I connected it with the person who I was. It was my identity. And even when I started drinking heavily and going to bars when I was 21, I would go to this bar in Milwaukee called The Landmark. Mm-hmm. And every Tuesday night was import night there. And basically all of Milwaukee that I knew would go. And I had... that nickname that all these girls gave me was Drunk John. So that's what I was known as at that
Drunk
time.
John.
Yeah. And I was sweet and I was kind and I was very peaceful, but I was just in a daze.
Right.
You
right.
Know?
And then did you kind of feel like that was your personality and you had to keep it up? Like you couldn't let them down? Like you couldn't show up at a party and be sober John.
Yeah. And I wasn't afraid of somebody, seeing the cracks in my personality. They talk about that mask that mm-hmm. you put on when you drank. I just knew that when I drank, it was who I was as a person. So when I got sober, when I went to treatment, I always use this analogy of I had a funeral for my former self at that time. I kind of had to say goodbye to that person.
Oh, wow.
And it almost like makes me want to cry thinking about it. And I know it's weird to say, but yeah, I kind of miss that person. But I think that's the disease in me.
Right. No, I totally get that. What makes me wonder, is there some way to connect to that person that we used to be, even though that person, you know, was drinking and destructive? Like, is there any way to, like, channel the good parts of those people that we were? Like, for example, I know I'm still insane. You know, like, I know I'm still absolutely crazy, and it's like, okay, well, I guess I didn't lose. I was like, oh, I'm going to be all serious and people are going to take me seriously, but there's just nothing serious about my personality.
You are still just as goofy.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah.
I know. I'm totally still goofy. And it's like, yeah, I kind of thought that part of me, I would mature, you know, once I got sober, but it hasn't happened yet. So.
Oh,
4 years. I may be like 4 years old now. That's kind of how I feel. Or no, maybe I'm 10. I think I'm 10 years old.
Well, they always say in the program that age that you started drinking at, like when I was 17 or 18,
mm-hmm.
I never really grew up from that age. So I kind of stayed at 18.
Yeah. Yeah. Arrested development. Yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. And when I got sober, I mean, I don't want to go too far into that because we're still talking about the past, you know, when I drank. But I would say that when I started making music and touring, that was when my drinking got pretty out of control. And then when I came home and those touring gigs kind of came to a halt, and I was home alone, not playing, not being artistic and creative and with my friends, that's when I totally hit my rock bottom.
Oh,
completely.
Right.
And I was drinking a huge bottle of Svedka every day, and I did that for about 6 to 9 months, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
I gained a ton of weight, and I would wake up and drink until I would completely pass out, and then wake up and do the same thing. You know, I'd wake up in a pool of sweat.
Ugh, or yeah.
I would
totally.
Wet myself. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to admit, but I definitely had a problem with waking up in my own urine.
Mm-hmm. Common with alcohol. I mean, it's common with alcoholics because, you know, all of your synapses and all of your organs are just lazy because your whole body's drunk, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, you're like marinated almost. Like we all have. Yeah. I would be crying and not realize I was crying when I was drinking.
Wow.
So, yeah, super weird things. Like things that your body should be able to control, and then they would, and I would just be like, why am I sobbing when I don't? It's just super weird.
So you had a complete loss of control all around the board.
Yeah. Just all around the board. And like you were saying, waking up, sweating. I'd wake up and the bed would be drenched and I could feel my heartbeat in the bed because my heart was pounding. And it's so funny. That's not funny, but I mean, that's when I get up and drink. I get up, go straight to the kitchen and get more alcohol because I was like, I got to stop my heart from pounding. When I didn't realize it was the body, it was my body being poisoned by alcohol. And that's what my heart pounding was because I was starting to have DTs.
My God. Yeah, I mean, I can think about that feeling right now, and I can feel it in my bones when you talk about that. Like, I can feel it. Like,
yeah.
Because I had the same thing.
Right.
And I was always afraid of, if I didn't drink in the morning, I was always afraid of having a seizure or something very bad.
Me too.
Because I was to the point where I was sweating and shaking, and that's when you can have a seizure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly when a seizure is going to come on. It's like, and I don't know about you, but for me, that was like the really scary part at the end because I was doing so much. Well, I was doing all of my drinking alone or in hiding anyway, you know, and I didn't know how I was going to come out and tell people like I needed yet another detox, you know, like I needed to go to a medical detox again or else I'd probably die. It's
how
just
many
so
medical
hard.
Detoxes did you do
in my life? Shit. I don't know, maybe about 12.
Oh,
I like my
God,
I've been
Dana.
Thrown or maybe like 10 or 11, but a bunch, cuz you know, I mean, like when I was in high school, when I was it was drugs, and then my parents would put me in detoxes and treatment centers. And then like with the alcohol, which was later in life, I remember doing it about like 4 times. And it's like
wow.
the thing with me is I had to have a program at the end of that or I would drink. Like, I went through this like 3-day period, or I guess it was like a week altogether, where I checked into one ER and they had to like hook me up to fluids and, you know, pump my stomach, and they did all this stuff, and they're like, your liver's in trouble, you got to go to a rehab. And I was like, I'm on my way. And, like, I left the hospital, and on my way back home, where I was going to figure out, a rehab to go into, on my way back home, I drank. And then, like, I found a detox to go into, and it was the same thing, and the doctor said I had jaundice and cirrhosis, and I stayed in there for about 5 days. And then when I got out, when I was waiting on my mom to pick me up, I drank. So it's like, that's always my, I feel like without, you know, a 12-step program in my life, I drink. Like, I just can't do it by myself.
Yeah, I firmly believe that a 12-step program is really the only way for somebody to truly work on sobriety, to me.
Yeah.
And you just weren't ready yet. Not saying that, you know, you were crashing and burning so many times. That doesn't mean that a 12-step program doesn't work. That just means you weren't ready yet.
Yeah.
You didn't hit your rock bottom. That wasn't rock bottom enough for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I think I just needed a little bit of the solution. I just needed to get my ass into a meeting and hear that there's a solution. I just needed to hear the promises one time, you know, and be reminded that this is where I belong. I belong with these people, you know.
That's funny you say that, because when I was in treatment, I went to Hazelden.
Oh, I know Hazelden.
In Center City, Minnesota.
Yeah.
God, thank God for them. Music Cares hooked all that up for me.
Wow.
So they both saved my life. And the unit that I was in, it was called Promises.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And it was all kind of like ship and naval themed. So, like, that's why I have a tattoo of a ship on me.
Oh, my God.
And an anchor. And
oh, how cool. Oh, yeah. My God. That's, I like that. I like the naval theme. That's
so cool. It was really cool. So who ran our meetings? We had a captain. That's who ran our discussions day to day.
So does each unit at Hazelden have a different theme?
They do.
Like, okay, so there's like the naval one, and then there's a totally like an Air Force one or something?
There was an Air Force one, but I can't even, you know, I don't even remember the names of the other ones, to be honest.
Right.
But I thought it was really cool in ours that who ran our meetings was the captain, and then the person that would help the captain was the skipper.
Oh, that's so cool.
That was really cool.
And so how long were you in Hazelden? What is that, a 28 day or was it longer?
It was a 30 day for me. And they wanted me to do 3 months. I just, Music Cares, you know, not any fault to them, but they couldn't cover that portion of me doing 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ended up doing 30 days and then outpatient and meetings and counseling.
Cool. I mean, yeah, Hazelden's one of the best of the best. I have so many Hazelden books. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's what the Betty Ford Foundation and Clinic runs all their literature from.
Yeah.
From Hazelden.
Yeah.
It's great. I would suggest it to anybody that is looking for help. It saved my life. And if I ever had an issue, I mean, you know, because we're all not safe. You know, mm-hmm. I say that I'm 7 years sober, but really I've been awake, you know, since 10 a.m. today. And so really I've been awake for 5 hours. So really, to me, I've only been sober for 5 hours, because it doesn't mean shit.
It's just a daily reprieve.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. It's just a daily reprieve. And we have to, you know, deal with that, what we're supposed to do. It's the greatest thing, because I just celebrated 4 years, and there's this guy who's been on Radio Rehab. He texted me, and I don't know, I think he's got something insane, like 33 years sober or something. He texted me the greatest thing. He said, like, congratulations on your 4 years. That's huge. Be sure and celebrate yourself, and be sure and give some of it away. And I was like, that's the key. Like, that's the whole key to my mentality right there. Like, that's the key to happiness, is giving it away. Like, that's where the miracle happens to us, is when we give it away.
Exactly.
You know, like, help
that's
other
beautiful.
People. Yeah, I thought that was super cool. So let's talk really quick about what happened in the end. Like, what was your rock bottom? What got you connected with Music Cares?
I wasn't playing music at that time. I was playing with this guy named Trapper, but I basically stopped showing up to practices. I stopped going to work at that point. And my girlfriend at the time, she was really frightened as to what she was seeing day to day of me going through. She was an alcoholic at the time too. And she was like, oh my God, this guy is really messed up. So she called my best friend, Ben Perlstein. And Ben lived in Hudson, New York at the time. And I was good friends with Tommy Stinson, who I was playing with right around that time as well. Tommy basically flew Ben in to Wisconsin and to come babysit me and help find a program for me, and figured out from our friend Heather West in Chicago, who's a publicist, that Music Cares could probably grant me most of the money to go to treatment, and they would hook me up with a really good treatment center. So Ben put that all together. It took him maybe about 4 or 5 days to get all the forms, turn them in, Music Cares then turned that in, and then found Hazelden for me. And Ben actually physically flew me there and checked me in just to make sure I got there safely. Mm-hmm. And I actually was weaned off that whole 6 days prior to treatment. You know, Hazelden talked to my mom and Ben at the time and was like, don't cut him off completely. Like, that could be very bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, just wean him off, and then we'll take care of him in medical detox when he gets here. And so when I showed up, that day was the only day I didn't drink for about 6 or 9 months or something like that. And I was shaking like a leaf on that plane to get there. And I stayed the night in medical detox. And then the next day when I woke up, I went to go see the doctor, and he went all over my blood work with me. And yeah, I had hepatitis of the liver because I drank so hard. So I had liver issues at that point. And when everybody around me was scared, like, they were terrified that I was going to die. So that's what made me think, like, okay, I'm waking up every morning and throwing up and reaching for a bottle, and everybody's terrified. I think it's time to get help. Mm-hmm. And then once that doctor told me that I had hepatitis of the liver, I just threw up a white flag. I was like, okay, you got me. That was my rock bottom, and that was the sign from God to be like, you're done, John.
Yeah.
it's enough.
Yeah.
You know? So, and literally, I have a very I mean, we're all at danger every day, us addicts that are sober, of losing our sobriety. But I just know that I can never drink again. If I do, I know that I will die.
Right.
In a very short bit.
Right.
And it's scary to me.
Yeah.
So there's like weeks at a time that I won't think about it, but then there's like days in a row that I think about it.
Yeah. It's weird.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, I know I always tell newcomers that are like, you know, that have like under 6 months, and they'll be like, I thought about drinking today. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, I think about, I'm not one of those alcoholics who never thinks about drinking. It crosses my mind all the time, you know, especially here in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. Well, it's everywhere in the world, really. But it's like, yeah, it's just what you do with that thought.
Every corner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I always say, like, I don't feel like I would be lucky enough to die. I would be insane under a bridge, you know, with the little tiny bottles, punching myself in the face, screaming at nothing. Like, I feel like that I would just lose my mind if I drank, you know, like things like that. Yeah. keep me sober, because I, you know, every time I see somebody doing something like that, I'm like, you know, but for the grace of God, there go I. Or I always say that wrong. I don't know. Is it there, but for the grace of God, go I, or but for the grace of God, there go I? One of them. I don't know. I can't remember.
They both sound great to me. Seriously.
They're both.
You know, that's important, though, that you say that you have things that are important to you that are keeping you from not drinking. Because I have a handful of things that I hold close to me that I think about. Not daily, but, you know, if I'm having a day that's very stressful and I'm thinking about drinking, I think about those handful of things and it helps me get through it.
Right. Yeah.
Most notably, my mother. I always think about, you know, the possibility of not, you know, I don't want to disappoint her. She's given me everything in this world and given me life, and and sacrificed everything so I can have an amazing life and everything that I need. And so I don't want to disappoint her. And also, my liver is obviously damaged
right.
from it. I mean, what's the point of, yeah, I'm sure at some point I can have a beer, but that's going to turn into 20. And that's going to damage my liver.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Again. And then my friend, it was one of the saddest things I had to go through in sobriety was my friend Chris relapsed and he just couldn't stop. And, you know, nowadays they've got DoorDash and Postmates and you don't have to go to the liquor store. So, I mean, he was just in the couch having gallons of vodka delivered. And it's like, it just killed him. And he, you know, and like, he wasn't even eligible for a liver transplant. And I just remember looking at him going like, I do not want to die like that. And just thinking about what a waste of life it was because he was so brilliant.
I remember you and I texting about that when that happened.
Like, yeah, so.
I'm really sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, but it was really, I mean, I hate to say it, but it was sobering, you know? It was like, it was really sobering and it made me think, it just made me look at alcohol in a whole different way, like a disgusting, toxic poison. Because that's what it is for us, you know?
Exactly,
it's poisonous
exactly
for us.
Exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah, we have that allergy. Mm-hmm. I wish I could drink like a normal person.
Yeah,
I can't.
Me too. I would love to. But yeah, it's like the minute I have a drop of it in me, it's all I can think about. You know, like, where am I going to get the next drop? So.
Totally. And alcoholism, you know, like when I was talking about when I started, it ramps up. Like, you know, you see like one of those graph charts of something going up. Your alcoholism goes up, and when you stop, it stays at that high point. You know, if you quit for 20 years, you don't come back down to normalcy, down to you start drinking when you're 18. Mm-hmm. It stays at that point.
That's right.
You know, a lot of people that start drinking again, they call that, I'm doing further experimentation.
Mm.
It never works out
for
them.
I know, never. And it says, like, it even says so in our literature, like, it's like, if you think you can go out there and, you know, do that and drink like a normal person, then go ahead and try it, but you can't. And I think it's in More About Alcoholism where it says that, but it's like it might be, and that's how heavy my disease is, because it's like it might be worth a bad case of the jitters to find out that you really are an alcoholic. And every time I read that, I'm like, oh, it says here I can drink, and I'm like, it's not talking to me. Like, that's my disease, like, just twisting stuff. My disease works so hard. That's why I have to work so hard at recovery, because my disease is buff. It's like the Mr. T of diseases.
It wants to bring you back in.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, it wants to bring you back in, and it wants to isolate you. You know, you were saying that you wanted to drink by yourself.
Yep.
It wants to get you alone, because then nobody from the outside can say anything about it or see what you're doing or how fucked up you really are.
Exactly. And it's like every time I'm like, oh, I'm too tired to go to a meeting, I'm like, oh, no, because I'm scared that's the disease. Like, I can hear the disease and it's talking in my own voice. So I get my ass.
Yeah.
I get my ass to one, whether I'm tired or not.
Good. I'm so proud of you.
I'm so proud of you, and I'm so glad we reconnected as sober people and who we really are. And I'm just so proud of us. This is so cool. For today's episode, what song would you like to close with? And tell us a little bit about it.
I'm going to appropriately play a song now called I Want to Die.
Not to laugh, but yeah, that's totally what we were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, there was a little bit of tongue in cheek happening when I wrote that song. I wrote this song sober, but last year my dad passed away.
I'm so sorry.
And
I know.
Oh, I'm sorry for you as well. We both
went
through it. Our amazing fathers that were musicians and beautiful people left us too soon. But when he passed, I was also in a really bad relationship at the time. I also got super sick and I had to have surgery.
Oh.
And last year was just, it was horrible altogether. But at the end, I made all these changes. I got surgery. I met my fiance. But at that time, you know, I wanted to drink so bad.
Wow.
I was even Googling, like, after my surgery, when I was left alone and I was on hydrocodone, I even Googled can you drink on hydrocodone? It's still in my browser history.
Wow.
Yeah, I was looking up those things, and I was, you know, 7 years sober at that point almost. And I wrote this song, I Want to Die, and it's basically about everything that I was feeling at that point where I just didn't want to be alive. I was ready to give mm-hmm. up.
Right, but you made
but
it through
I'm
it.
I'm glad I didn't.
Right.
I was writing it to try to be, you know, I didn't want to be like, I'm trying to write a song that's like an anthem for people that, you know, just want to give up. But I've actually had people write me that have heard the song already before the album's out. And they told me, they're like, God, this is like an anthem for every dark thought that I've had. And it's really refreshing to hear that somebody else thinks like that.
Cool.
And so I think that's pretty neat.
That's the greatest. Yeah, that's the greatest, is you gave other people hope, you know, with your
exactly.
period of disheartenment. I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
Cool. So without further ado, it's I Want to Die.
One, two, three.
John, for being on Radio Rehab this week. That song was called I Want to Die from the Mini Meltdowns. If you want more from John and his awesome band, you can find them on goodlandrecords.com. Tomorrow, John will be back, and we're going to be discussing sobriety in the music business, what it's like to be in the Nashville music scene specifically, and also what it's like to be sober and a musician. So keep coming back.